going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
The Caps again. Beauvillier down low. Rebound, score! Dylan Strome puts Washington on top.
Dembe, Fiala, waits, back across, they score! Kopitar, the third power play goal tonight for LA!
Drives to the net, he holds, finds a cutter, score! Marchment sets up Sagan!
Overtime and Dallas and Colorado last night as the Stars take a series lead, all part of another interesting night. Marty, there is only one series right now that is tied. Did you know that?
Yes, I knew that. And a part of this is because Tampa and Florida still have not played game two, and Colorado and Dallas have played game three already. So that's two series that cannot be tied right there. And you've got
five of them are 2-0.
That are 2-0. And that's all five Canadian teams, right? You got the Oilers down 2-0, Montreal down 2-0, Ottawa down 2-0. Obviously, Toronto's up 2-0, and the Winnipeg Jets are up 2-0. So yeah, that makes it interesting because all of those are 2-0 win the two games at home. Now the series shifts, venue, and it could change the way that those games are going to look.
Well, guess what? The venue shifted last night. And the anticipated return was lovely and awesome for one of my favorite players. But what did I warn against? Not sure it's going to mean much in the way of a bump. And sure enough, the Avalanche did not win in Gabe Landeskog's return.
It was not, and look.
It has nothing to do with him
being
back.
Chris Peters had a fantastic line on Twitter yesterday. They grew up so fast from playing with Colorado in the AHL to being the captain of the Colorado Avalanche in the NHL in just a matter of weeks, right? So it was kind of funny. But yeah, do you think Gabriel Landeskog was going to come in and all of a sudden be this offensive player that was going to change the tempo of the game? No, he was physical. He worked hard, and that's what you're going to get. But the timing of an NHL game, when you haven't played NHL action in 3 years and you've only got a few games in the AHL in your rehab assignment, it was a fun, very, very emotional type of night, and the energy was there. And look, Colorado was smoothing along. They were up 1-0. Things were good. They give up the goal to make it 1-1. The problem with Colorado is their power play absolutely left them with this loss. It was on the power play. Even the 4 minutes, Mason Marchman takes a 4-minute high stick penalty, and they had, like, Dallas had a couple of opportunities early in overtime on that power play.
Colin Blackwell.
Yeah, absolutely. Colin Blackwell. Like, it was, to me, the power play should walk around with a cone of shame saying that's why they lost the game in that one.
Yes, well, okay, if that's how you really feel, what should the Kings power play be wearing right now? They're 5 for 10 in their series.
Yeah, a crown, a big golden crown.
Oh, like the stupid big hat, but make it a crown?
No, the Burger King ones, you know, like the paper
but
ones.
You know, the dumb, like the big hat?
Yeah, make it a big crown. Yes.
That's what people should wear. That would be awesome.
The Kings power play is hot. I'm sorry. We talked about all these, you know, 5 series that are 2-0. You know, I look at, okay, the Blues could have a chance to come back. Although Winnipeg has played well defensively, Montreal is just a goal away from, like, you know, changing both of those games. And Jake Evans had a wide open net, hits the post. That could have tied it at 2, made a difference. Ottawa, Toronto, it's tight. But the Edmonton Oilers have nothing going on for them. They had one period of Connor McDavid saying, I'm going to be, you know, just the lights out Connor McDavid that everybody knows. And he put the team on his back. They tied it 5-5 just to see the no score, a flubber late in the first game. But in last night's game, the Edmonton Oilers, it was hard to watch.
But they were within a goal in the third period.
They were close to, but it felt like it was just a matter of time, in my opinion anyway, until the Kings were going to just blow them right out of the water. The defense with the Oilers, without Matthias Ekholm, is very, very exposed. Mm. You don't have a partner for Evan Bouchard. What was Evan Bouchard doing on the Quinton Byfield goal? Like, he just said, I have my man. The man is like 40 feet away from the net. He let Quinton Byfield walk in and go roof. I felt like there was a lot of mistakes that were made, but defensively, the Oilers and on MSG right now, that's the goal. Look at Bouchard. He's like, I have my guy. I let Quinton Byfield walk in on a breakaway. It was bad.
That was less offensive than Colorado's goal by Nichushkin.
Yes, that was. but you know what? It's like, okay, so it was Lebushkin, it was Tyler Seguin and Matt Duchene, I think, on the ice.
Yeah.
And Duchene, his body language was like seriously, dude. I didn't see Pete DeBoer when Duchene got back to the bench, but I would anticipate in my mind, I could see DeBoer grabbing him by the back of the collar and be like, if you ever show up your teammates like this again, like it's a mistake, but don't look around like and showing up everybody. Like but you know what? Dallas wins. Everybody's happy.
Yes. And Edmonton, like I said, was within a goal once again, as they, I was concerned for Kemper and the Kings at that point when it was 3-2 in the third period, but obviously turnovers were their undoing, defensive zone play, their undoing. I don't know how much of it's on Skinner, but we ended the show yesterday talking about Skinner and I boldly said he would win last night. The question now is, what do you think they will do going back to Edmonton as far as goaltending is concerned? Because history, very recent history, shows that, the Oilers stink at the start of almost every series. And they are dominant, 19-7, as the series go on the last couple of years. So, like, there's actually, in my opinion, no reason to be that concerned right now for the Oilers. However, my guess is there's still a decision to be made on goaltending.
There's a big decision to be made on goaltending. I'd go to Calvin Pickard. I would go to Calvin Pickard game 3. Pickard had a really good season, considering the expectation for Calvin Pickard. He had a 900 save percentage, 271 goals against average. It was fine. And down the stretch, he was fine. Like, Stuart Skinner wasn't healthy, didn't play, and Calvin Pickard was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to Pickard game 3, hoping that it changes things, hoping that it gives everybody the sense that, okay, maybe that, because Pickard may not be Dominik Hasek, but at least he doesn't look to me like he beats himself. Stuart Skinner looks to me like he beats himself, and that's the problem. Can Stuart Skinner be a much better goalie than Calvin Pickard? 100%. But right now, you go to Pickard game 3, and then you keep game 4 open depending on what happens. But I think they have to. Like, it's been really hard to watch the body language of Stuart Skinner as well throughout the first 2 games.
Darren Dreger coming up at the bottom of the hour. Amerks assistant coach Nathan Pache coming up as we get set for Amerks game 1 versus Syracuse tomorrow night, Blue Cross Arena. Don't forget Bandit Land tomorrow as well. As we're into the quarterfinals, it's single game elimination as Buffalo takes on San Diego. they are able to get past that, then we dive into best of threes once again in the semis and in the finals. Buffalo looks for a three-peat. Marty, do you know how many three-peats there have been in the National Lacrosse League history?
Three?
One. You know who was the goaltender for it?
Oh, it was the, what is it, the GM of the Bandits?
No, the current goaltender for the Bandits, Matt Vince.
No, wait, it was Vince?
Yeah. With Rochester, 12 through 14.
It wasn't Chugger?
No.
Okay. Well, nope. Did he win a National Lacrosse Championship?
Probably,
that's who
yes.
I remember when I was like coming into Buffalo through Rochester and the Bandits. Mm-hmm. That's who I remember a lot playing goal for both franchises, really. And he was really good at that.
Yep. Well, anyway, it's going to be tight, tough matchup, and Bandit Land's going to be packed. Hope to see you there tomorrow. Amherst, of course, have. Did you happen to see Yuri Kulik's presser yesterday in Rochester?
No, I did not.
he's still. He has this wonderful innocence about him, and he's just so friendly and nice. And Kevin Oklubja, a longtime Amherst Rochester reporter, asked him at the end, like, "Have you been taking English lessons?" And again, it like. Even when he wasn't like,
it's a compliment because he probably wanted to say your English is so much better.
But the thing is, like, even when Yuri didn't think it was good, he would always try.
Yeah.
And he would do so with this, you know, boyish smile. Right. And so Yuri actually really appreciated the question and was like, well, I didn't have Rusi with me. So I had to speak English, right? So not having Lukasz Rusek with him the entire year. And then he proceeds to say, it's still not very good. And Kevin was like, no, it's actually really good. You should be very proud of it. So
you know what? One of the things that came out of the locker clean out for the Sabres was Yuri Kulik and Jason Zucker's relationship. How Yuri pointed out that Zucker is the best teammate he's ever had, helped him find an apartment, get furniture, move into his place. I had a really fun interaction with Zucker and Kulik in the stick room one morning where Yuri was looking for a new stick and Zucker was like, hey, I can't help you, kid. You're not on my line anymore. Like it was so funny, but they had this relationship together. And I think that's great for Yuri Kulik to have this kind of relationship with an older veteran that has been around. And like he said, I didn't have Rusi with me. Often you kind of, you gravitate towards your comfort level, right? I hung out with, when I first got to Buffalo, Donald Odette. I'm like, Donald, what do I do? You know, Donald was the guy. And then obviously throughout the years, JP and Danny and, you know, Jean-Luc Grandpierre and Denny ML and the French guys, it's totally normal. But when you have somebody else that can take you out of your comfort level, it's great. It's been great for Yuri, and I love that from Jason Zucker.
Indeed. And again, more Amherst talk coming up here. Anything else from last night? Obviously, you know, we talked about the
our
Kings.
Boy, our boy Logan that? Thompson last night.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He was really good. He got 2 points, yes, and he got more than
Dylan
multiple
goes,
2
no,
points.
It's the playoffs, bud. Nope, we don't get 2 points. No.
Which reminds me, my year of midget AAA hockey, 16 years old, the team I went to play for had literally 5 wins the year before in 45 games, right? So we play our very first preseason game, and we win. And we're coming back into the locker room. We're all excited. Our equipment manager was this older guy that was so big heart, and he's so happy. He's like, 2 points, guys, our first 2 points of the year. And somebody burst his bubbles and said, hey, we call him Tipuel. Hey, Tipuel, there's no 2 points in preseason games. He's like, oh, it's still a win. Like, it was, but it was great. Like, Logan Thompson was fantastic yesterday. Mm-hmm. He got lucky. Jake Evans had the wide open net, hit the post, but then he made a couple of saves on breakaways. And the turning point of the game last night, Montreal takes a 1-0 lead. They have 3 scoring chances right after that. They don't score on any of them. Washington scores. A shift later, Washington scored again. That was the game right there.
It was, and you know, we'll see whether the Capitals get healthier as this series goes on. With you know, what they hope is a return of Alexi Protas at some point. Otherwise, I mean, they're just they're kind of doing what they've done all year. They're very well, I mean, they're well prepared, well coached. That's like stupid cliche stuff, but this is also fitting very much the you know, remember I went through segment by segment with the Capitals this year?
Yeah.
And every 10 game segment, they were really good, and then they were okay, and then really good and okay. And guess what? They ended the season okay, but we literally talked about it 12 games before. Just wait. Like, they'll probably be fine when the playoffs begin. And so far, with an incredibly small margin for error based on overtime and narrow victory last night, meaning empty netter with just a second to go, they have found a way. But they also look very much like the team that was dominant at times through the season.
Yeah, and I have really liked Anthony Beauvillier, the addition of Beauvillier and what he's been able to accomplish playing on the top line. And now you don't have Protas and you have to have somebody step up, right? McMichael with Dubois and Wilson, they're your second line. They're great. But I think that Anthony Beauvillier, other than when he made an attempt at communicating with Anna Kendrick on social media years ago, which was really funny, this is probably his best work that he's done in the National Hockey League.
I'm sorry, who was that?
Anthony Beauvillier years ago. I don't remember what happened, but he was saying he had a crush on Anna Kendrick, the, you know, the girl from the whatever.
Remind
the
me
movie
not to
is.
Go down this rabbit hole again.
Anyway, it's a rabbit hole. But anyway, he made a comment on social media and everybody jumped on and said he's such a nice guy. He saves babies from burning buildings or whatever to try to get attention, which was really good.
All right. Well, we want all the attention.
Pitch Perfect. That's the movie. Sorry. There you go.
As much as humanly possible, let's get the attention on the Amherst tomorrow night. They're home to Syracuse. Third straight year that they're playing a best of five against the Crunch. And we've got a Genesee pregame happy hour for fans 21 and older from 6 to 7. That's at Blue Cross Arena in the Jenny Brewhouse Upper Atrium Bar. We got $3 12-ounce cans of Jenny and Jenny Light. And, of course, the first 5,000 fans in attendance for game one are going to receive an Amherst rally towel courtesy of Genesee Brewing Company. Nathan Patience is with us from the Amherst right now to get us set for the matchup tomorrow. Nathan, how are you?
Patience, you got us?
Hopefully,
oh, good. There you go.
We're lagging a little.
That's okay. Like, lag is good as long as you're there.
That's we've heard in a while. What's happening with your group? What is it like when you have Yuri Kulik come back to the mix?
It's exciting. He's such a good kid, and he's been with this group before, so it's pretty smooth transition. You see him back with his close buddies, and they're smiling and joking around on the ice. And obviously, he brings quite a special dynamic as a hockey player as well. But the biggest thing for me is as a person, just how he fits in with this group. And you can see he's happy and skating around, joking, and we're happy to have him.
Now, where do you guys have him spotted right now for the matchup tomorrow night, game one? I would anticipate he's going to play with his buddy Roseanne, but where do you have him spotted in the lineup?
Well, that's top secret, Marty. But I don't think that's going to be the look of the lines right now. We'll see how it goes. It's a fluid situation right now. We've had a couple lines that have really clicked, so we have to make sure putting him in, we find a combination that works the right way for the group, because we've had combinations that have been here all year that have really worked for us. And that's the reason where we are where we are. So we don't want to mess with that too much.
You know, fitting in all of what you're just saying is Lukas Rusek, who over the last two playoffs is actually the leading scorer on this team. And I think it's easy for some people to overlook that, based on how much attention we pay to first-round picks, NHL prospects, that kind of thing. How would you describe Rusek's value to your top six, but also the entirety of the team?
When he's on, he changes the dynamic of our team. When he's doing what he does, he's arguably the best passer in the American Hockey League when he's making those plays. He makes plays that other players just don't. Obviously, it's frustrating he never shoots, so you know he's passing, but he can make those plays that others just don't see. So he's going to be a key factor of us in this series. There's going to be times, you saw it late in the season, we had a good run at 6-on-5 games where we needed a goal at the end, and it was usually him. He was a catalyst driving the bus. It was going through him. So we need him to be at his best. When he's feet are moving and he's making quick plays and he's protecting pucks down low. He's a game changer for us. So it's going to be real important for him in the series, especially with a bigger Syracuse group. They're a little older. They can lean on you. I think he has the ability to spin off and absorb that contact.
I always love the first couple of days before game one, because it seems like there's that energy at practice. You go through your meetings, right? Power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, goalie meetings, you know, what are the tendencies? So what were you in charge of in preparing, you know, with a matchup against Syracuse that's coming up?
Well, I'm usually in charge of a lot of the defensive side structurally as a team as well, but, and then penalty kill. So it's getting guys ready and dialed into their tendencies. And then when you get into a playoff series, you can actually break it down a little more detailed. So we had meetings with coaching staff and then we trickled it in every day during practice. Usually you'd just have a game. You'd have a pre-scout before the game. If you, you know, a few clips can't have too many or you lose guys' attention span. But when you have a playoff series, you can really focus in on the minor details. So that's what we've been handling this week, every day with practices, and it kind of, whatever we showed, it drips into our practices plans. So
the goal scorer that you are, I thought maybe you're going to see you're breaking down the other team's goaltending. So I was hoping for that.
Yeah, that's that is not my department at all. Vinny's the goal scorer, but also we have analytics group in Shamo, who knows the goalies really well. But also, I mean, we've played these guys 12 times, so it's not like the players don't know the goaltending as well.
For those that haven't seen a ton of Amerks games this year, how would you describe the defense core? And does it have a specific shutdown pair?
We've been pretty fortunate this year, especially. I've really been able to roll six. I think if you look at a pairing that really probably matched a little more with the other team's first lines, it would be Rathbone and Johnson. Just the way they skate, they can defend anybody. And they're both very strong physically. I know they're not the biggest guys, but physically strong. They can end plays, and they especially can end plays with their feet, and they can break pucks out real fast. So a lot of times those guys will be matched up. But to be honest with you, a lot of times I just roll. I'm very confident in we're seven deep, fortunately, and a lot of ability offensively as well, but guys that I feel are responsible defensively. You look at a guy like Komarov, who's a rookie in this league. You could argue he's one of our best players the last month and a half. I really love his games at. So as the season went on, I used him more and more in those situations and in the penalty kill, and he's just gotten better and better every day. So you're talking now, you got six Ds in the lineup at any given time that I feel comfortably on the ice against any line.
Pedro, you know I love to talk on the ice, letting you guys know you got time, you got pressure. I love when defense talk to one another. What's that dynamic been like with Devon Levi and the group of six, or, you know, the other defensemen, the communication? If you go to a game, like, I like to listen and see if there's a lot of talk. Are you one that pushes for more talk? And how is Devon with the communicating, you know, styles of the game?
It's something we always talk about with our defense and center or low forward. It's a really important part of the game. I would say it's not an overall strength of our group. We don't have real loud voices. So it's something you always got to hammer down. Make sure you're communicating to Devin. He knows what's happening, all those sorts of things. And I think with young, especially young defensemen, and you have two Russian defensemen, sometimes, you know, at the start of the season, I thought they're maybe hesitant to talk, but now I think that's part of both of their games has gotten better and better. So it's going to be important. Syracuse has a hard forecheck. Whenever you're running against those tough forechecks where they come with all out pressure, we're going to have to really talk to Devin and make sure he knows his options when he's, and they rim pucks a lot too. So Devin's going to be playing a lot of pucks.
Are there comparables that you've, you know, been teammates with over the years that just have that popularity that Devon Levi has? Like, I was there last week. It was awards night. He not only got team MVP, but most popular as well among the fans, who were just like genuinely, excitedly, like chanting his name. And I was just like, this is always a really unique, you know, thing within a team. And I'm curious, like, some how you view that, how Devon handles it, but also like some of the more popular players you've played with over time.
Yeah, well, obviously, Marty, you played with him. Millsy was popular with the fans. I think the fans gravitate to the goalies because it's somebody you see every night, and at the end of the day, they make the big saves. They can electrify the whole group. And I think Devin has that type of personality. He's a very happy-go-lucky, smiling guy. And he has that ability to make that game-changing save. And it's exciting for a fan or a coach to watch. And so I think that's part of it. I'd say players that played out, when I played in Grand Rapids, Tyler Bertuzzi, like the fans just loved him. His style, you know, that scrappy style. But he scored goals. He was one of our top scorers. But he had that, you know, kind of fan, I don't know even how to word it, just a visual for fans that's exciting to watch, and that personality. So he'd be somebody that kind of came to my mind if you're thinking about how the fans, you know, really got behind one player.
You guys have a lot of players, obviously, all season. You had a lot of players, and you got guys that are not going to play. When I remember my second year in Rochester, we had the Calder Cup going, which was basically the scratches 3-on-3 games, and we kept stats. Like, we had it on the board, and we kept stats, goals, wins, teams were going. It was competitive. Have you guys started the Calder Cup, coaches included? Because I know you guys take part in a 3-on-3.
Well, Vinny already said today he's putting the full gear back on for tomorrow's game because we have a lot of players. So that's a great idea. I mean, we've been competitive all year. With Vinny on the ice, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're picking up pucks or playing a 2-on-2 game, it's going to be competitive. So, but I like the idea of keeping wins, losses, and stats, except we've, as a coaching staff, slipped the last month or so. I don't really like where our game's trending, to be honest. Or maybe the players are getting better. So we'll see how it goes. But I like the idea of holding us accountable.
What has changed for you now in your years on the bench at playoff time? Like, do you feel any different on the eve of night one?
I would say more nervous as a coach than I even was as a player. It's just your mind races more. As a player, you're thinking about, well, what am I going to do? You know, and then it's playing, you know, then it's done. As a coach, there's a million things that are going through your mind every night. And so the week leading up to playoffs is, you can see the coaching staff, all of us, like, we haven't slept much. You know, you're just thinking, like, what should we do here? What should we do here? Like, there's a lot of decisions. And you, Marty, you talked about it. There's a lot of extra players. So those are difficult conversations and decisions to make, too. That weighs on us, you know, that we're humans, too, and we know they are. And it's a tough thing when players that have been very important to your group and are going to be very important to your group as the playoffs go on that aren't possibly playing game one. And then you're thinking about, well, how do we stop them here? How do we create offense here? And the mind just doesn't turn off. I sometimes have to get up and just write a note in my phone so I could get it out of my head and then hopefully get some sleep.
Last one for me, Pacher, this or that. I know you guys all look good in suits on the bench, but now as a coach, do you think that we should continue with the suits on the bench, or should we go to casual, you know, kind of like a 3-quarter zip, something like that, like a unified look, a little bit like the college, you know, colleges are doing that a little bit more. So what would you prefer as a coach, the suits, full shirt and tie, or the loosened, you know, quarter zip look?
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I like the suit. I don't mind putting on the suit. It feels like you're part of something and you're dressed up. But I know, I bet if it was up to Leo, we'd be wearing this hoodie on the bench. He loves his hoodies. But I do like the suit look. I think it's sharp, but I can see the game trending that way. You know, the Bill Belichick hoodie maybe making its appearance in a hockey one of these days.
Nathan, good luck tomorrow. Thank you so much for the time.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Amherst and Nathan Page, Michael Leone, Vinny Prospel and company up against Syracuse tomorrow night. It's game one at Blue Cross Arena. And Sunday, we have game two, Marty, at 3 p.m. Yeah. It's going to be a great weekend. And of course, after that, Amherst hope that they're in a position to go down to Syracuse the following week on Thursday, Saturday and get this thing wrapped up. But one game at a time, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow at Blue Cross Arena. We're back after this. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN.
Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
As promised, Hockey Insider Darren Dreger from TSN joining us for a weekly installment. And for, you know, programming note here, we're off tomorrow. So cherish these moments with Dregs. How's your sleep these days, Dregs?
Not terrible. So I'm just full disclosure here. All right. Transparency. Game one, LA Kings, Edmonton Oilers. 4-0, I go to bed. I'm like, all right, I've seen enough. This is, there's just no way, as much respect as we all have for Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and everything else, this game is over. And then I can wake up the next morning and I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
Thank heavens they still put out essentially a condensed game, like a review, right?
Yes.
So that one saved me. But yeah, I don't love the late starts, especially when they're dropping puck at about 11:15 Eastern PM, as we've seen in the Vegas series. But
yeah, but it's the local that kills me. Like again tonight, like St. Louis has an atrocious local start time, close to 9 o'clock. Like it's I don't get it.
And Tampa, after having an 8:50 puck drop in game one, they have a 6:30
game
time today. So it's like literally two plus hours difference in your start time and your preparation, everything. But listen, Dregs, that's the playoffs. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But last Saturday, Kevin Adams, Lindy Ruff met with the media, and Kevin Adams said, I still need to meet with Terry Pegula, and, you know, we have to have our meeting. From my knowledge, it hasn't happened yet. What are you hearing, and what do you think that meeting will produce?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I mean, there's lots of speculation around the media world, right, on what's going to happen. Could this happen in Buffalo? Could that happen in Buffalo? Most of it is unfounded, and it's real tough to lean on speculation. I mean, that's just difficult when you're talking about the potential of what could be significant change. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to nibble at the edges of all of this because, sure, it could involve Kevin Adams. And I'm not suggesting that he's going to be unemployed, that, you know, Pegula and the Sabres are pushing away. But maybe there is some sort of change in the hierarchy of the Buffalo Sabres. So that's about as far as I'm willing to go in terms of the world of speculation. There is internal ongoing conversations, nothing has been finalized. And I don't know that'll be, you know, we're already having this conversation Thursday. Do I think that something imminently is going to be announced in the next few days? No, I don't. But as of this morning, I was just told ongoing discussions and really nothing new to report.
You feel like, I suppose every case is different, but it's the time of year where lots of teams are going through evaluations and change and there are openings elsewhere. Does one affect another often, or, you know, as far as availability of people and pursuit of people for certain positions, things like that?
Yeah, it can. It absolutely can. You know, I'm thinking of a couple of examples. Yeah. You know, Gerard Gallant, remember, coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, until I guess it was Pete DeBoer came available. You know, people weren't expecting that to happen. Oh, all right, Pete DeBoer's available. Callum McCrimmon and George McPhee went, okay, love Turk, real good guy, excellent motivator. This guy is better. You know, this guy's going to help us win a Stanley Cup. And I think that they kind of felt the same when they hired Bruce Cassidy. So I think it happens more often. Coaching. And this year we saw it, right? Drew Bannister, nothing wrong with the coaching that Drew Bannister was doing early in the year with the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm. I mean, he made his way up through the organization. They loved him as a coach in their American League system. Gets to the NHL, knows the players who have developed. And then Jim Montgomery pops open from the Boston Bruins, and Doug Armstrong is like, okay, history with that guy. Yes, he's a better coach, more experienced, and more of what we need right now to boost this team into the playoffs. So I think it happens more on the coaching carousel than it does anywhere else.
Okay, so off of that, like teams that are aggressive say, oh, I like this one better, I want him, boom. With the Islanders GM position open, and, you know, there's going to be others, you know, kind of position open as well. The Islanders are rumored to have wanting a president of hockey operation and a general manager, whatever.
Yeah.
But who's available? Because right now I'm looking at lists online. I think Ken Holland, Mark Bergevin, Peter Chiarelli, Jarmo Kekäläinen, some up and coming like Matthew Darche or whatnot. Like, who's really open to these jobs right now and that teams should be looking at?
Yeah, well, number one, if we're zeroing in on the Islanders for the moment, you know, it sure sounds like they want experience coming in, and probably in both areas. So in Ken Holland, you get decades of experience, you get the decorated resume, all of that. You know, is Kenny at this point in his career and his life, at his age, wanting to be president and general manager? That feels like a little bit too much. But you bring in somebody like a Jarmo Kekäläinen, or, you know, Chiarelli, he's been out a long time. You know, even though he's a key component to what's going on with the St. Louis Blues. Like, Doug Armstrong leans on Chiarelli a lot. But I think he got unfairly treated after his experience in Edmonton. You know, I do. I think he's an excellent general manager waiting. Matthew Darche, his name has been out there a number of different times. You know, you can look at that AGM level, and there are lots of qualified guys. You know, I think of Chris Kraepper as an example in Detroit. I mean, he's been doing that job for a long, long time. So go down the list. But specific to the Islanders, at least it's the intel that I'm getting from sources there is that they prefer experience. But is that Ken Holland plus, or is that Ken Holland and something else? Or, you know, and now let's flip it here. Maybe Ken Holland doesn't look at the New York Islanders as the greatest job either. Like, he might look at it and go, oh, there's too much work to do there. There's just too much. So it is going to be interesting to see how John Collins, who's heading all of this, manages it. But he's got a ton of respect, I know that, for Holland, as he should.
Our boy Kevin Weeks has been thrown into some speculations. Do you think Weeks gets
a job? He always is. He's like Pierre Maguire all of a sudden now in the last couple of years. And I like Pierre a lot. But I at one point, I remember having a conversation with Pierre, and I don't know who coined the term, but they nicknamed him the finalist, right? Because he was always rumored to be in the final running for these GM jobs, and it just didn't happen. And I remember having the conversation, maybe Bobby Mack was part of it too, where he said, Pierre, you got to find a way to stay under the radar, as difficult as that is. And that would be my advice to Kevin as well. I mean, Kevin probably could slide into a hockey operations role. Is he ready to be an NHL general manager? I don't know. That's not my job to say. I have a healthy respect for the work that he does, his playing experience, and his connections. I get all that. But if Kevin gets the job, I hope that it isn't based off media speculation. I want to see the release come from a club from left field that says, we have just hired Kevin Weeks for job X. I think that would serve him better.
Do you think that the Anaheim coaching vacancy doesn't get nearly the attention it should?
Yes. I do. You know, I look at that team. I mean, Greg Cronin was shocked that he got let go. You know, most coaches are, they can sense that something's coming, right? Like, maybe there's less communication towards the end of the year between management and you as a head coach, which leads you to believe, all right, well, they're obviously not happy. I didn't get that sense from those close to Cronin. He was borderline shocked that he got let go. But Pat Verbeek and those around the Ducks think that team is ready to flip. You know, they're ready to make a turn. Are they ready to be a playoff contender? I'm not so sure of that. I think that there's still a lot of work to get done. But I think it's a quality job. I do. And, you know, I keep hearing Joel Quenneville's name out there in a couple of different spots, right? Maybe Anaheim, someone will link him to the New York Rangers. I mean, there's, I guess, some possibility there. Now that Chris Drury has been extended, of course, we remember the experience between Drury and Quenneville way back in their Colorado days. Mm-hmm. You know, Seattle, Ron Francis moved up to the role of president. Botterill is now the GM. There's history with Francis, of course, and Q. You know, could that be a fit if they need more experience in Seattle? So, yeah, I mean, any head coaching job in the National Hockey League is coveted by those especially who aren't NHL head coaches. But I think Anaheim has has earned a higher level of placement among those looking for a job like that.
I have a very serious question.
Uh-oh.
Could we see Ralph Kruger back in the NHL?
Oh my
gosh. Just a joke. It's a joke. Just because Botterill is in Seattle, that's not even worthy of mention. What happened in Seattle? Dan Bylsma has the job in Coachella for 2 years. They know exactly what he is. He goes to the finals in the AHL 2 years in a row. They promote him to the job. And then a year later, they say, you're not what we thought you were. Like, they knew exactly who he was when they hired him. And a year later, they fired him. Like, what happened there?
Yeah, it smells to me like there were perhaps too many cooks in this kitchen when they promoted Bylsma from Coachella to the National Hockey League. Now, I do remember Ronnie Francis, you know, facing the speculation on television. That was a couple of months ago. Was it around midseason? You guys remember when he came out and said, look, Dan Bylsma is my coach. Yeah. I think at the time, though, that that Francis wanted to go through maybe a wider search, a more exhaustive process. And I think ownership felt like, okay, well, no, I mean, we've got a real good staff in Coachella, which includes Bylsma and, of course, Jessica Campbell, who was promoted to the NHL bench. Let's go that way. Let's go that route. And obviously, that's the way they ended up going. So the change in front office is interesting. And I would have thought that there was a relationship between Botterill and Bylsma because of their American League connection. And if you want to go back further, mm-hmm. their connection back to the Penguins when they were in Pittsburgh. So mm-hmm. It's an interesting one to be sure that they made the changes that they did. And the fact that Francis got elevated. I mean, there were some who wondered about his job security, you know, and as it's turned out, you know, he moves up into the role of president of hockey operations. So a lot of question marks around that Seattle team. But as we heard from them, they feel like they're a team that's ready to push for a playoff spot. And what is clear is, when I look at that roster, I think they should have been closer to a playoff spot than they ended up being. And I always wonder, fellas, when it comes to a coach firing like this, Cronin would be the same way with Anaheim. Mm-hmm. How did those exit interviews go? How did those go? Because if you're the general manager, whoever's sitting in on that meeting, and you've got 15 players that come out swinging in those exit interviews on what they didn't like about certain aspects, well, That can shift the planning in a hurry.
Yeah, and Seattle ends up smelling a little bit like Nashville at the end of the season simply because they went big in free agency last summer.
Yeah.
And they added Stevenson and they added Montour and it didn't
work
out. It's not on them. In fact, like, their numbers were pretty much what you would expect, but shocker, the goaltending wasn't at the same level.
Yeah.
So the coach bites the dust, and we look at it in similar ways to what happened in Nashville, because for everything that went wrong in Nashville, UC Saros didn't have a very good year.
Exactly right. It always comes down to that, doesn't it? I mean, the three staples, you know, goaltending, what's your defense look like?
Yeah.
And then obviously, how strong are you up the middle of the ice? And and if you say you're above average in all three of those areas, guess what? You're a playoff team. That's just the way it works out.
Dregs, there's 5-0. So the Ottawa Senators are down 2-0. Montreal, the New Jersey Devils, St. Louis, and the Edmonton Oilers. Mm. Which one would you say has a chance of coming back and maybe winning the series?
Well, I mean, they all have a chance. The closest.
Which one has a better chance?
Yeah, the closest. I mean, for me, it's kind of a split between two. Edmonton, special teams, they got to get that figured out and clean up the big mistakes that we saw in that game last night. Mm. And I don't think Montreal's been rewarded for their play. I really don't. I mean, Sam Montembeau was terrific. Logan Thompson was really, really good. So you've got a bit of a goaltending battle there. Mm-hmm. But without Logan Thompson, that series is even at one. So I'd give the Oilers and the Habs a chance.
Thank you for sending us into an unexpected long weekend here on Sabres Live.
My pleasure. You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dregs.
Will.
Darren Dreger from TSN. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Creating new names for final segments. How about what is on your mind with 2 minutes on the clock?
What's on my mind is that it is so hot outside right now that I just want to put my bathing suit and go lay on the back porch. Like, it's going to be like almost 80 with the humidity and everything today. I don't know. It feels great. And I love it because the NFL draft is tonight, not tomorrow, tonight. And I think a lot of
doesn't it go on forever?
It goes on forever. And the Bills don't have a Jeff, remind me, did they have a late pick or they have pick 30 yet, right? So they'll probably trade that and not pick. But anyway, I'm just saying fans are going to sit on the patio, have a few beverages. It's going to be glorious tonight to be able to just enjoy your friends at the at an establishment to watch the draft.
Of all the times I actually wanted you to pick the wrong word to use, if you had only said you wanted to go out on your back deck in your birthday suit instead of your bathing suit, that would have gone over really well.
Somehow, you know, Brian Mudrick at TSN that does the Habs play-by-play, him and I have gone on a tangent of Speedos over the years.
Oh, gosh.
And bathrobes and Speedos. I don't know why. It's always the joke. Like, we'll text each other, and there will be a Speedo comment or whatnot. So my first thought was, I just want to go on my back porch in a Speedo and enjoy the sun, but decide to just say bathing suit, like shorts or whatever. It'd be great.
Give me four winners tonight.
Okay, so tonight we're going to get Toronto a win. We're going to get the Lightning a win, the Golden Knights a win, and the Winnipeg Jets a win.
Oh, let's go Blues. I won't see you tomorrow, but we'll see you Monday.